Fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Great move to the right at the 50. Cuts back to the left at the 40. He's loose at the 30. He's at the 20, the 10. Touchdown, Cardinals!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
You know, it's a tough call. It really is. With all due respect to the cities of New Orleans and Dallas, it's always either the first or the last. This is a bonus edition of Cardinals Underground. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard. I'm waxing philosophical about the release.
Don't wax, that's dangerous.
The 2018 preseason schedule, it has been released. A moment of silence, everyone. In fact, here it comes. Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate that for observing the moment of silence. The poll question, as I saw online, was stated as follows: which preseason game are you looking forward to the most? And although in week two you're going to New Orleans, in week three you got a big tilt at Dallas on Sunday night, nationally televised on NBC, it's always either you look forward to the first preseason game because you're so sick and tired of hitting the same jersey for 2 weeks of camp, or you're just looking forward to camp ending so much, you look forward to the final game of the preseason, and here comes the regular season. Does anyone concur with Paulie preseason over here? It's always either the first or the last game of the preseason that you look forward to the most.
First of all, I think we need to call a pause here, because let's face it, the preseason is when you really get the chance to shine, Paulie, on the radio. You got Pash doing TV.
That's right. Paulie pinch hitter, Paulie Pash.
You get to play-by-play. I know you're not going to get to do the Dallas game, it doesn't sound like, judging
by. That's right. You're absolutely. I'm going to crane my neck again looking at that jumbotron from goal line to goal line. That's what happened last time. I ended up with a kink in my neck, yeah.
So, I'm just saying that, really, I'm sure you look forward to the preseason. That's a big time of year for you.
That's true. We got to go play-by-play over there, get it ready. And Darren, yeah, let's not forget, Jim Omohundro just cited the fact, that's right, you're going to go sidelines of the Superdome.
Not in Dallas, obviously.
No, that's true. Well, see, as I'm saying, you're going to stay off the injury list in Dallas, because when you're on the sideline and you don't really watch the field, you end up watching the jumbotron because it's like 80 yards worth up over your head, and you're just drawn to it magnetically.
All I know is preseason schedule comes out and there's only four games on it as opposed to the five last year. So that's the big thumbs up from me.
You know what? That is a win-win-win all around, isn't it? You're right. Addition by subtraction. Four instead of five.
Training camp starts a little later.
I do like that first one where you're kind of you're grinding pretty good going into that first game because it's been a little bit monotonous at that point in training camp. So especially getting to your first game of the Steve Wilks era, and it's only the preseason, but at least you can kind of see some stuff on the field and just kind of see what they're going to try to do. Their coaching philosophies are going to start to come out. So definitely the first game is the one I'm looking forward to the most.
Although, let's face it, and I can't speak for you guys, but I know for me it's like I feel the same way. I'm like, oh, cool, we're finally going to get to a game. And that feeling lasts about 8 minutes of the first quarter, and then you start realizing how much it's the preseason. And
Hashtag vanilla, But here's the thing: there's a rookie quarterback.
Good point.
Who's going to enter in the second half? There is always that element.
And I mean, obviously that would be a big one. And I just enjoy watching individual guys in the preseason because obviously you can't take anything, big picture from it, but. Remember watching Tyvon Branch last year in the preseason, and he looked really good, and he really carried that over. And we had the Blaine Gabbert storyline, and he looked good, and obviously he didn't pan out in the regular season. But you can tell in the preseason sometimes that some guys are going to take off. David Johnson, I think, was a great example. When in the preseason his rookie year, we're like, okay, this guy maybe is a little bit better than a third-round pick would suggest. Mm-hmm. So there's not great things you can take, but there's always these little nuggets.
A rookie quarterback, Paul. I mean, you didn't enjoy the Jake Coker times? I mean, we've always had a rookie quarterback.
It's always someone. Phillip
Sims. I mean,
even Logan Thomas, you want to see the debut, man. You never quite know, man.
Logan Thomas
the
was
game.
His debut was awesome. He was like 12 out of 14, and we're like, okay.
Yeah, there's always something
kinda
to talk about. So always something to anticipate right there. Here's the other thing. And Darren, you'll be there for game number one. Not every year, but quite often there is that rookie who has made some noise in camp, and you want to see him in game action. And then you got to keep your head on a swivel because you wait to see which veterans are getting off the bench to come up to the white stripe, and they want to get a firsthand look at that rookie when he finally gets into the game. It happened with David Johnson. I vividly remember David Johnson finally getting into a preseason game. I think it was week three of the preseason, wasn't it? Because he missed the first two with the hamstring.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And literally, Patrick Peterson,
stiff-arming
Tyron
everybody.
They're just, and you know what? Those guys were stiff-arming us to get out of the way. They put down the sunflower seeds, and they came over, and they actually started watching. Same thing happened with Tyron Matthew when he got in. All the starters got up, and they wanted to see him, and the offensive guys came over. And
Smokey Brown.
Yep. Here's the other one. When Tim Tebow got in to the fourth quarter of a preseason game, it was preseason game number four. I don't remember what year it was.
You had to mention Tebow, didn't you?
The entire Cardinals offense got off the bench, and they, especially the receivers, they wanted to see what sort of ball he threw.
It was 2010 because Tebow was picked one pick after Dan Williams, I believe, or maybe it was Dan Williams was right after Tebow, and I remember that draft party because Dan Williams' pick got completely washed out because everybody
That's
was
right.
talking about Tebow.
Tebow mania. Don't ever start the Tebow chant. We can't have that here, okay? Cardinals underground.
He's a baseball player now.
That's right. Although, he might be done selling Mets merchandise, and they're going to bring him back to the new spring league or whatever else that thing is. You know, he's got to reunite
Spurrier
with the old,
wants him for his
the old ball coach.
Is he playing fullback yet?
Yeah, he just goes around selling merchandise. That's really what he does at this point. All right, so Steve Wilks had his introductory press conference with the media, at least the off-season version, the phase one. And question number one was just about, what sort of message have you sent so far to the players?
We talked about several things, but the most important thing was it's about really winning the day. Let's worry about the details, all right? The everyday aspect of really coming in here and trying to get better as a player.
So once again, the big picture for the Big Red was covered in about 30 seconds. Everything heretofore and since has been about the process, about each individual step. And I get the feeling we're going to keep hearing that. Focus on the little things.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that that's what the message is going to be going forward. And you know, we've gotten little bits and pieces about what this team might be about. And we've talked about it before. I mean, I think Steve Wilks is very businesslike in terms of his approach, not only with his team, but also with the media and the message. It's clearly not going to be a Bruce Arians type of thing. And that's fine. And also that the focus is going to be very detailed. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I mean it's when you say it's a step by step thing, I think it's very much a step by step thing, like a step by step in April and then a step by step in May. We're not even just talking about like the steps of, phase two to OTAs to training camp. It's even more fine than that.
And he brought up special teams again, which is a big attention to detail type thing where you look in the NFL and there's all this speculation and there's so much going on right now. And then you get to the regular season, and there's always these games that go down to the wire, and a team wins or loses because of two plays or three plays or one play. And it's so interesting because it's such a short season, and sometimes one or two games can completely swing your entire season, whether you make the playoffs or miss it. And if you do have a coach like this who is very attention to detailed and you can steal a victory in the regular season because your guys did a little bit of something, blocked a punt or had a nice return, something on special teams or something you saw offensively or defensively, that's such a huge thing. So I think maybe in this sport more than any other, if you have a coach that can squeeze that out of something, that's huge.
And that makes sense. I mean, in a league where more than 50% of the games are historically decided by 7 points or less,
right.
It makes a difference. It makes sense. There's no, and especially since he's a new coach with a new system, I would think that's imperative to try and take it detail by detail.
And I do think that's important. And when you start talking about special teams especially, I mean, that's something that's been missing here in terms of significant playmaking. Really in any part of it for a number of years now, and it's something that this team could really benefit from.
All right, well, Cardinals Underground here. If you caught our special edition before this one with Chad Williams, he sat right here in the studio at Cardinals headquarters, and we covered a variety of topics, including the style and manner in which his new head coach, Steve Wilks, commands the room.
It's kind of still a filling out process, but I have a good sense of those guys. Coach Wilkes, he come in and he's not all uptight. You know, he kind of talks to us. Then he gives us his other side. Then he brings us back to this side. So, you know, I like all those guys. I feel like we're gelling really, really good with the little time we've had already.
There's that side of Coach Wilkes that's definitely in charge.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's that.
Nah. Every side of Coach Wilkes is in charge. He's
in charge.
Every side. That's every side is in charge.
Because that's what we see. That's what we see.
Don't get that twisted.
So, yeah, he sent me down. Just shut me down immediately right there. You know, he saw where I was going with that one, and he just sort of did an option route and went the other direction on me.
You know, having a chance to talk to a number of guys, and I'll be posting a kind of a big Who is Steve Wilkes story next week. And that's definitely the vibe I've gotten, not only from the Cardinals that have just gotten to know him a little bit, but definitely from guys that have already played for him, that, you know, there are multiple sides to Steve Wilkes, but there's always that underlying man in charge kind of vibe.
Yeah, you could definitely tell that. And then I think what Chad Williams was kind of alluding to, obviously he said he's always in charge, and I think he's an authority type figure where, you know, you feel like this guy deserves respect because that's how he carries himself. But he's personable too, so he might. It's almost like the Coach Arians philosophy of coach him hard and hug him later, where Steve Wilkes is going to be hard on him, but he wants to get to know them personally, and I think he's going to, you know, give them compliments when they deserve it. So I think he's going to do a nice job of balancing them, all the while knowing that, yeah, I am your coach, and I'm going to, you know, be cracking the whip pretty hard because this is what I think you need to do in order for us to be successful.
You know, Chad Williams obviously is a receiver. We were joking on Cards Weekly that virtually every player on the Cardinals roster right now is a receiver, because guess what? Here comes the playbook. That's what they're throwing at you right now. In fact, here's Steve Wilkes.
Man, we're throwing everything at the players right now. We're trying to give them as much as we can and really trying to see how much they're going to be able to absorb and retain. And then at some point in time, when we really start trying to shape the system, we're going to be able to do what those guys do best.
I always find that interesting, because BA would do the same thing in training camp. Everything would go in, and then you would start to pare it back. You would think maybe you build up to where everything's in, but no, it comes at you at first out of a fire hose, and then you can drink out of a drinking fountain of it later. And I don't know if they're trying to sort of test the guys. I don't know if they're trying to figure out who can retain and absorb and execute it and really learn it, but I always, or maybe they just don't know what the style is yet because they haven't even seen the players on the field, so anything is a possibility.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I look at it, where you test a lot of different things out, see what makes sense for your players with, like you said, their skill sets, and hey, this play looks like it really works because we have these athletic offensive linemen that can pull, so let's put that one into the bag of tricks that we really like, and then this one isn't work as well because we don't have a certain player that can perform an essential task on that play. So that's kind of how I think. I think you just kind of want to see what you have in mind and see how that translates to the personnel and then scale back.
I will say that in my close to 20 years covering the league, that this is always kind of how it's been, especially with the offseason the way it is. There's multiple waves of installation. There always has been. They come in, they start doing these meetings, and you install it essentially in the classroom. Then you go outside, and then you start installing it on the field again, not only because you want to test out everything on the field, but also because it's repetition. That's how you learn all these things. And then when you get to training camp, you start all over again. So I don't think the fact that they're kind of throwing everything at them right now is that surprising. And as we all know, as we've covered this for a number of years, that's how this league works. That's how you get the whole playbook in. And then when you get week to week and you start, you know, game planning for a specific team in the regular season, then it gets really pared down for that specific week. So I think this is pretty much par for the course in terms of trying to throw it at them. Now, the difference this year is the fact that it's a new coach. You know, if this is Bruce Arians' sixth year or seventh year, then you have at least half your team or more that is somewhat familiar with it. So when they're throwing everything at them for the first time in the offseason, it's not really throwing it at them for the first time. But that first year with the new coach and everybody's new, it's inevitable. It's the only way you're going to really get it all out there in the right time frame, given the limitations you have in the offseason in terms of training these guys.
So if the playbook is, say, 20 chapters, then, you know, you got the Seahawks in week 7, you're going to rip chapter 3 and chapter 14. You know, you sort of select, to your point, and you game plan accordingly based on the opponent, what you want to do against that particular defense. The difference also this year is not only is it a new offense for everyone, but there's no master of the offense in the locker room. There's no Drew Stanton, who has played in Mike McCoy's offense before, which I think is somewhat intriguing. I don't know if that handicaps the quarterback room at all without an expert like a Drew Stanton to instruct everyone. Will it matter if Sam Bradford is part decision maker along with being quarterback? In fact, that was a question to Steve Wilks. How much say will your starting quarterback have in the O?
With a veteran guy like Sam, he's going to have a lot of input in the things that we're trying to do. Most importantly, the guy's smart. He understands the game. He's played for a while. And we want his input, most importantly, to be able to give him some accountability within this offense.
Didn't Bradford say during his press conference he had X number of offensive coordinators in his Y number of years so far in the NFL? Hasn't there been a staggering number of systems in OCs?
I know with the Rams, it was every single year it was somebody different. And obviously,
between
he's moved
the Eagles
around.
And Vikings, right? I mean, he's probably had a half dozen.
Shermer might have been his only back-to-back years.
You're right. He did say that it was the first time he had the same system in back-to-back years, and he came out the first game of last season and was NFC Offensive Player of the Week.
I don't think that's necessarily a shock per se. I think what the Cardinals just came out of, with a coach and an offensive coordinator staying the same with the same top two quarterbacks for the entirety of Bruce Arians' tenure here. I mean, that's rare, because if you're struggling as a team, inevitably there's some kind of change. The quarterback is changing, or the coordinator is changing, or the head coach is changing. And if the head coach is changing, a lot's changing anyways. And if you're super successful, a lot of times that offensive coordinator is getting a job somewhere.
True.
As a head coach.
Yep. Todd Haley.
So it's very infrequent that you have the kind of stability that the Cardinals ended up having along those lines coming off of what they're coming off of. Now, the difference is, like you said, like the Arians had Drew Stanton. When Ken Whisenhunt first showed up, he brought in Brian St. Pierre, who he had worked with a little bit in Pittsburgh. So even though Kurt Warner and Matt Leinart, who were the top two guys, weren't necessarily knowledgeable over what kind of offense he wanted to run, clear or what Todd Haley wanted to do, Brian St. Pierre at least had been around Wiz, so he kind of had an idea. So it is something that you like to have. And you know, I know at one point there was some let's say joking around on the internet, maybe with some of my friends in the business, about whether Derek Anderson could end up back here because obviously.
Yeah,
you know, but
the
Derek
Carolina
Anderson knows
and McCoy
Wilkes.
Ties,
and but yeah,
and he goes McCoy. All the way back to Mike McCoy at Carolina, I think.
So I mean, you never know how that might turn out. I think we're in a position where that's not going to happen. I mean, they've made it pretty clear who their top two quarterbacks are with Bradford and Glennon, and again, we'll see the rookie. And I think ultimately a lot of this has to do with going to, you know, who the rookie might be. Again, I think, and I'm sure as we get closer to the draft, we'll talk a lot more about this. I do think there's going to be a rookie quarterback. There's almost always a rookie quarterback. The question is it going to be a rookie quarterback that you draft in the first, second, or third round, or is it going to be later, or how is that going to work out?
And I think in a perfect world, the familiarity is nice, because a Drew Stanton that's on the sideline who's not playing, he can see certain things maybe and talk to the starter like a Carson Palmer, and I think that helps out. But you also look at the team that led the NFL in points scored last year was the Rams, and Jared Goff and Sean McVay were in their first year together, and it clicked immediately. So I don't think it's a prerequisite for success. I think, and Bruce Arians was big on it. He pointed out Brady and Roethlisberger and talked about the length of time they've had with their coordinators and coaches and Peyton Manning. He thought that was very important, but those guys are also superstar talents. So is it a chicken or the egg type thing? And when you look at what the Rams did, I think it's a blueprint to say, you don't necessarily need to know each other very well to have success if you put a good plan in place and have good talent.
By the way, Kyle, I don't know about you, but I mean, how dare Darren actually mess with Derek Anderson? You know, he doesn't take this stuff, you know, anything but serious. There's nothing funny about him maybe coming under Steve Wilks. There's nothing funny about it, Darren. He takes it serious.
You know, Derek Anderson does live out here now. He just bought a house. So
really? Okay.
We could go through the Donna McNabb stuff again.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe I should move it along then if he's actually living in town. Steve Wilks on the offseason plan for Sam Bradford. Forget about what's going on in the quarterback room. He wants him on the field on the gridiron. And with that in mind, here's what we know about the plan.
The biggest thing that we're going to do with Sam is to make sure that he's ready to play 16-plus games. You know, I've seen what he can do over the years. I'm not concerned about trying to get him out there as quick as possible to be able to throw the ball. We're going to make sure that we're giving Sam everything that he needs to be successful. We've created a plan, and we're trying to follow that plan accordingly.
And we don't know the plan. That is correct, right? Unless I'm missing something, we don't know when Sam Bradford's actually going to be on the field, correct?
There's been a lot of vagueness.
Yeah. It's meeting and trying to figure it out, and it'll, you know, kind of come to fruition in the next few weeks and see how much he's doing. But as for now, I don't think we know much of anything.
Okay. And the plan there, obviously, is to get him healthy and do anything you can to ensure he stays healthy. If that is the case, then wait a minute. What could this Cardinals offense look like? That was exactly the question to David Johnson on NFL Sirius Radio from Adam Schein.
How good can this Cardinal offense be if Sam Bradford's healthy?
Oh, it's going to be great if Sam Bradford's healthy. Like I told you, been saying, you know, from me watching him personally, I've seen him do some great things. I think the biggest thing is just being healthy, not just with the addition of him, but also the linemen we got, the receivers, and everyone else that we have added to the team on the offense side. I think we definitely will be the top offense in the league this year.
Top offense in the league this year, David?
Yes, I'm going to guarantee that.
I love it.
Mad Dog Radio, David Johnson, I'm writing it down. Top offense in the league, hashtag guarantee, David Johnson. So did that fill your notebooks, gentlemen? I know you're always looking for a great quote. I mean, did you guys start writing furiously when you heard that?
It's a bold quote.
It is bold.
It is bold.
I love David, but I think you're getting a little ahead of yourself, especially when you're in the same division as a Rams team that's got a lot of things going for it offensively right now. And I'm not saying this offense can't be good if Sam Bradford's healthy. I mean, he's got to stay healthy, but I think starting to predict right now that you're going to have the top offense in the league when there's obviously still things to be worked out in terms of who the receiving core is going to be, how you might want to line up on the offensive line, if Sam Bradford's going to be healthy. I mean, we could just go down the road and say, you know, maybe that's just David having ultimate confidence in himself. I mean, because if he plays super well.
Sure.
But
well, hey, you take, you know, David knows you take the offense and then you add 2,000 plus scrimmage yards and 20 touchdowns and boom. Okay, that's one way. How else could the Cardinals offense be number one?
Really, I think it's going to come down to first off, me knowing what I'm doing, me picking up this offense and Mike McCoy's terminology and his offensive scheme. The O-line is going to help Sam stay upright and stay in that pocket. And I feel like, you know, we have the pieces.
All right, the beginning there, you can hear David Johnson still lament the mental errors from 2016 that he still believes cost him 1,000 yards receiving.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. I mean, he made enough mental errors on routes messed up where he would have been the targeted receiver and he would have connected with Carson or whoever was at quarterback at that time, and he would have had 1,000.
Well, Carson played the whole season that year, so we were good that year.
Thank you, Darren.
Okay.
I get that, but he also had a lot of passes that were supposed to be 4-yard gains, and his unbelievable athleticism turned into 30 or 40 yards. So, you know, you can understand why he is lamenting certain things, but – overall, would you take that exact same year in 2018? Of course you would.
Yes. So. Everybody now.
So except for the knee injury in the last game.
Yeah.
Ooh, he wouldn't want that.
Look at Darren. I just see one after another. Just Darren Downer over there. You know, just well, come on.
I'm just saying facts, Paul.
All right. Okay. Steve Wilks on David Johnson and what he's seen of what he hopes to be his franchise running back once again.
He's just an outstanding individual. Works hard, dedicated to his craft. He's going to come in. He's so excited right now just to be back, you know. He talked about the things that he learned sitting out last year. I'm excited to get him back on the field. He's a major part of what we're trying to do.
Still hard to believe he missed 15 1/4 games a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say he was ever forgotten, but you don't realize it till you see him in the weight room again. And you realize that's the NFL. That's what an NFL running back looks like. That's the 0.1% of running backs in the world. That's David Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, we were just so excited to see what he was going to do. And, man, I mean, all of last offseason was just dominated by David Johnson. And he was obviously the number one fantasy pick by, you know, a bunch of people throughout the country. And there was a lot of hype going into the year. And for it to only last, like you said, 3 quarters and to end it there, it was a rough blow for him and a rough blow for Cardinals fans. And like you said, once you kind of turn the page on the season and now we're totally looking at 2018, he's working out with the rest of the guys. Now it starts coming back. Like, this guy is a special talent. And when he does get back out there, if he just stays healthy, you know, what kind of crazy numbers can he put up this year?
And I would say at best, he's considered the third best running back in the game right now. He's probably, you know, Le'Veon Bell, and then Todd Gurley passed him based on last year. I'm just talking nationally what people think if you had to go ahead and do your power poll of running backs right now. And the kind of hype that Saquon Barkley is getting, I think a lot of people are, you know, have truly indeed forgotten about David Johnson in light of all the hoopla around those other guys.
Well, let's face it. It's not just the fact that you've, quote unquote, forgotten about David Johnson, especially with the injury. It's because of the team he plays on. The Steelers made the playoffs. The Rams made the playoffs. You know,
and the Rams have won the offseason so far, Rex Ryan.
There you go. So, I mean, I think if this team wins, no one's going to forget about David Johnson. And even when they were, you know, sub 500 in 2016, when he was amazing, obviously a lot of people thought a lot about him. But to the victor go the spoils. And that oftentimes also becomes attention nationally, because if you're putting up numbers in a victory vacuum, as you will, I mean, it's tough to get the kind of recognition.
And I think he'll be right back up there quickly, because I don't think any of those guys are the natural receiver that David Johnson is. And a couple of them might have a little bit of an edge running the ball, just pure running. But his combination of skills, I think, is unmatched. When you talk about Bell and Zeke and Todd Gurley, they're obviously great players. But for my money, I think David Johnson's the best among them. And like I said, if he stays healthy, I think he's going to remind people very quickly of what he can do.
And if he does get 1,000 yards receiving this year, that probably means he's the number two receiver.
Yep.
Not sure that's best overall for a Cardinals offense.
That's what happened in 2016.
Yeah, would love to have a legit number two receiver. Could Chad Williams be that guy? I know that's a stretch, but, you know, they always say players make the biggest leap year one to year two. And with that in mind, Chad Williams here on Cardinals Underground, the bonus edition, he shared what he's working on here in 2018.
Just mastering all the basics. You know, coming out of college, you think that you have all the basics down until you get to the next level and realize it's totally different. So just little things, route running, leverages on DBs, just those little quarter of an inch things that just helps you get, you know, way better than you thought.
He talked extensively of how the little things, and that's the big difference between college and the NFL, and it took him a while maybe to comprehend and hone those small skills that are so necessary. In fact, we then asked him, all right, overall, you know, you're going to try and check some boxes between now and the start of the regular season. Please expand on that.
Playbook is definitely the first box. Playbook is definitely the first box. I want to be able to hear one word and just snap and just know exactly what's going on, what I'm going to do. And, you know, and by that, I can play as fast as I want, how I want.
It's funny. That's exactly how David Johnson started his answer. He said, I need to know the playbook. I need to know what I'm doing. And then so I sense a little bit of trepidation from some of the guys because the playbook's so new. And they still have a long way to go to master it.
I mean, again, we're early in the process. They haven't been on the field yet. They've been meeting for 2 weeks. I mean, it's tough to get too deep into how comfortable they are. I mean, you're not going to be comfortable. No. It'd be kind of foolish to think you were. It's interesting talking about the idea of Chad Williams as number two and where the receiving core is, and even David Johnson. I mean, we sit here and we talk about how David Johnson almost got 1,000 yards in 2016 and maybe could have if he hadn't run some routes the wrong way and all this stuff. And the reality is one of the reasons he almost got 1,000 yards was because of what an incredible letdown the rest of the receiving core was that year.
No doubt.
I mean, it was in many ways not just David Johnson's talent, but out of necessity that he needed to catch the ball so much. And I'm not saying that that's where they are necessarily this year, but, I mean, nobody's going to be surprised if David Johnson is the second leading receiver on this team this year. And
but is that the best case scenario? Unless Sam Bradford's throwing for 5,000 yards, that's probably not great overall for the offense necessarily.
I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Kyle disagreeing with
us.
If
Larry Fitzgerald has 1,000 yards, David Johnson has 1,000 yards, and then you find a number two who gets 700-800 yards, it doesn't really matter to me who gets it. I mean, if you say your number two got 1,000 and David Johnson got 700, you total it up, it's the same number. So
I agree with you. But that the key then is getting the third guy to get 800 yards or something like that, because we already had that. We had David Johnson was pushing 1,000. You had Larry Fitzgerald with over 1,000 in 2016. And there isn't anybody in this room and anybody who really was around that team that was going to say that passing game really clicked. It never did.
You just got to have that other receiver or two that the defense is going to truly respect.
Right.
You know, just to be a viable threat to open up underneath for Larry, to open up some of the passing lanes for David Johnson. And right now that's unproven. At best, we'll just leave it there and be kind.
That's definitely, I mean, I think the number two receiver and the number two cornerback are probably the two biggest questions outside of quarterback of the future on this team right now. And whether that's addressed in the draft or other guys coming in, or if you're just looking for one of these guys that are on the roster to step up. And then, obviously Chad Williams is one of the most physically gifted wide receivers on this team. And it was interesting listening to him and talking about those quarter of an inch things where he's trying to figure out how defenses are changing their coverages at the snap and where he has to run. I mean, the guy is fast and strong and physical, so he can clearly get open if he knows what he's doing. But if he doesn't know where the zone is going to be and where to sit in a certain pocket in the zone, he's not going to get as many catches. So that's the big thing for all these guys right now that are young is to really master the mental part of it.
And there's our segue. Speaking of changing defenses, that's what the Cardinals are doing. Their base is going from a 3-4 to a 4-3, and Coach Wilks addressed that.
When you really look at what we did here last year, about 70-75% of what we did was an overfront, which is a 4-3.
All right, there you go. And you know what? Hey, look, we've talked about it here on Cardinals Underground, and Larry Foote in that media day with the assistants, he said the same thing. In his words, it was like he said more than two-thirds of the time we used – four down linemen. So there you go. Those percentages bear out with what Steve Wilks has seen just from afar on film.
We've talked about this. I mean, again, when you start talking about base defense, teams are rarely in their base defense. It's about nickel and five defensive backs and that kind of thing. And there's so much passing in this league that it was inevitable that you're going to have four down linemen a lot to rush the passer. That being said, clearly, I mean, Patrick Peterson said couple weeks ago, you know, this team, even though it was a 3-4 base, I mean, I'm paraphrasing now, but this team, even though it was in a 3-4 base, I always kind of felt like it had 4-3 personnel. Obviously, Steve Wilks sees it that way. And in the end, he's going to want to go with probably what he's comfortable with. So if he feels like he can make the personnel work that way, it'll be interesting. See, to me, everybody keeps talking about Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden as the defensive ends, especially Marcus, and whether he fits. I'm much more intrigued with what they do at linebacker right now than where they are at defensive line.
Yeah, and I think how you're going to blitz and certain things like beyond the base defense or the nickel defense, I think it's more about the style and the aggressiveness, and that's what I'm more interested in. I think with Todd Bowles, he did a lot of that A-gap blitzing where Deion Buchanan or whoever it was stood right over the center and really attacked. And James Betcher used a lot of slot blitzes with Tyrann Mathieu or Buda Baker. And there's a lot of different things you can do with this group because Baker and Hassan Reddick and Buchanan can all blitz from that second level. So that's what I'm most interested in beyond the base defense is exactly how you're going to deploy these weapons.
So not only is it Coach Wilks' system that he had in Carolina as defensive coordinator last year, in his opinion, it best suits the personnel, and he expounded on that.
When you start talking about Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, those guys right now to me are most effective when they're going forward, when they're going towards the quarterback. In a 3-4 scheme, a lot of times, you know, one of those guys are going to be dropping. To me, you want that athleticism, that kind of skill set, you know, attacking and getting after the quarterback.
Right. So from now on, heretofore, effective immediately, start calling those guys defensive ends. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Marcus Golden. It's going to be Chandler Jones. And But I'm with you, Darren. I mean, you know, how exactly does Deion Buchanan, Hassan Reddick, Josh Bynes, obviously they signed him to the contract for a reason. Coach Wilkes mentioned that. Love the speed. And, you know, that's going to be a hallmark. Obviously, that was a hallmark of that Carolina defense with Kuechly and Thomas Davis. So if you can replicate any of that, that's where this scheme really fires on all cylinders.
And with how Kuechly Josh Bynes picked up the defense when he came in, I mean, it was the middle of training camp when he got to the Cardinals, and he made an impression right away learning exactly what to do. We're talking about these guys learning the playbook in the next 3 or 4 months, and he had, what, 3 or 4 days before our first game, and he played really well.
We just kept calling his name in that first preseason. Yeah. As soon as he got in, we just kept calling his name the rest of the game.
Yeah, and he made the team off of that, and he found a role. So I think him at Mike linebacker makes sense to me because he does know what he's doing, and he's fast enough to play it. So I think that's a nice fit where in the 3-4, he just filled in for Reddick and Buchanan if they were hurt. But now I see an opportunity where he definitely has this package in the base defense where he can be a big part of the team.
And then, of course, Steve Wilkes was asked the inevitable question about the L.A. Rams and their defense and adding some of the big names, whether it's Sue or Tlaib, Marcus Peters, and where that's all going and what that means in the NFC West.
You guys will hear me talk about this throughout the year. I'm going to keep the focus on us. You know, that's where it's going to be. I think we have, when you really pull the layers back, we have a lot of great talent as well. You know, right now we're flying below the radar, and that's great. And I like where we are. And we're going to continue to stay there until the time is right.
Interesting. Do you think he knows something we don't? Do you think he's still just in discovery mode, trying to figure out exactly what he has, considering they haven't even been on the field yet? The question I really wanted to ask him was, how much do you still have to learn about your team? Because my presumption is an enormous amount.
Why didn't you ask him?
A lot.
Why didn't you just stand there and say, what the heck?
Not really sure why. I was going to ask him that, and then I was also going to ask him, and I need to, well, I don't know why I didn't ask him this. Is there anything you've seen so far that has concerned you that you've needed to address upon your arrival? And I figured, well, there's no chance he'd answer that.
Fantastic questions. I wish they would have been brought up. You know, I will say on your original point, Here's the thing, and in some ways it's good that as we get to the end of the podcast here, we're kind of looping back to where we started, because we talked about at the beginning, you were talking about the message that he had for his team. To me, with all due respect to Coach Wilkes and where they are right now, I think there's no way he can know a lot of that stuff because they haven't been on the field and they haven't installed everything, and there's just so far to go that to me, this is about the message. This is about Steve Wilkes standing and telling the world, and by telling the world, his players then hear it out there coming back to him.
Sure, through multimedia channels.
That we are a good team. And he's not saying this, I am, but, you know, forget about the Rams, or another F word about the Rams. Right. And, you know, you're going to keep hearing about all these moves they make, but we're going to be just as good. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't honestly matter if he truly in his heart of hearts believes they're going to be at that good. And I would think at this point he is, because it's the same reason David Johnson said that he guarantees that they're, if Sam Bradford's healthy, they're going to have the number one offense in the league, is because why wouldn't you believe that? It kind of goes back, quite frankly, Kyle, to like when I understand concerns like from the fans this time of year with things moving around and everything, but like I don't know how you could really go all in on feeling crappy about where your team is in April when you don't know.
You don't know. I mean, you went 8-8 with so many injuries. Right there, that just muddies the picture. You really have no idea what you would have been. You can't even use last year as a gauge because you didn't have anywhere near a healthy roster. So you really have to go back 2 years, and there have been so much change in that time period. It's 52-card pickup.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the overall narrative, people look at Carson Palmer retiring, Bruce Arians retiring, and Sam Bradford coming in with the health questions, and that's why there's a negative view. But I think it's important to remember that Steve Wilkes came from Carolina, where that Carolina team battled with this Cardinals team quite a few times, in the playoffs twice. Both of them were good, and he saw there are a lot of new players, especially on offense. But defensively, there's some guys that were still around during that really nice run that he saw. And I think he's excited about the defense. And they didn't make any moves in free agency to bolster it, so people aren't talking about the Cardinals defense right now. But it's a good unit. I think he's excited about that. I think he believes in the moves they made on the offensive line. And, you know, this is the season of just looking at free agency and just looking at maybe holes on a team's roster instead of their strengths. So I think that's the reason why he's more excited than maybe the general public or somebody that's looking from a national point of view about the Cardinals.
Why didn't I ask those questions? That's a question I'm going to ponder until the next edition of Cardinals.
Don't give yourself an ulcer.
That and whether we should be concerned about young Kyle in New Orleans week two of the preseason on a night game.
He's never been there before.
Wow, that clinches it.
I've been there on vacation.
Oh, now. You have been there?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my bad.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to go to Magazine Street. That looks cool.
I don't know. A little inside knowledge might actually be worse. We're not exactly.
How old were you on vacation?
How old?
Yeah.
Last year.
Okay.
I'd assign you Jim Omohundro as your chaperone, but that probably won't help. I'm just going to leave it at that. That is Cardinals Underground.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call